Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
You have to be strong in today's world.
Strong.
Keep your focus and
up.
What you believe in, how to achieve all your dreams.
Hey.
Keep moving forward. Never accept less than who you are.
Live
your best life.
Hey.
Be strong and free. It's the Hit Back.
Hey.
Nahasha Black.
Hey.
It's the Hit Back.
Hey.
With Nahasha Black.
Hey.
It's the Hit Back.
Hit Back with Nahasha Black is sponsored by the Cancer Treatment Centers of America, Baha Retreat and Spa, Kalina Financial Advisors Limited, and J.S. Johnson.
Welcome to the Hit Back. I'm your host, Nahasha Black. It is a beautiful day here in the 242. I hope that everybody's doing well, that you are taking care of yourself, that you are living your best life today. Hello to everyone who's listening, however you're listening, in your car, watching us on TV, well, listening to us on TV, with TV, if you're watching online on YouTube or Facebook. Thank you, and I appreciate you always because you are the engine that keeps the Hit Back going. Thank you guys so much. Today has been, or this week, post-election has been a week of much introspection, for me, anyway. Why post-election? But because we always knew that the next day would be Friday. The next day, filled with jubilation for a few, filled with sorrow for a few, filled with the same, the blah for a few. But it would always be Friday. We knew that the next day would, you know, what we hear now, what is the catchphrase? What my good friend will be joining, listen, you know, it's a new day. And to some extent, it is. World of politics for us having a new government. What we're looking for, I think, the Bahamian people, a new government per se by itself, but a new culture of governance, culture that ushers in a new attitude, a cogent and cognitive and critical level of thinking that stands tall, that is true to its word, that brings with it its own level of swagger, that allows us to question and they respond. We want confidence, but not arrogance. Right? We want to be uplifted, but we don't need your song and dance. We don't need that anymore. That season is done. And I say all of that to say this. For those who won when the PLP came in, congratulations. For the rest of us, as they govern, then let's get ready to ask critical questions. Ladies and gentlemen, we are losing a lot of people who are able to make the funds. Those with the ability to leave are leaving. Those who have the ability to contribute in the economy are leaving. And Constance Town. And that's the reality. So we need work. The government challenges, right? And we're going to talk about the council, all of that stuff. The government that came in has been faced with real challenges. We thought that the one that came in before had real challenges. The challenges they left is a joke. The challenges of the Christie administration, it feels like it's a joke compared to what was left by the Minnis administration. But then the Minnis administration, the former prime minister says that they're going to be a vibrant opposition. What I needed you to do was be a vibrant leading government. I needed you to be a vibrant policymaker. But you're going to be a vibrant opposition. It's different when the pressure's on the other foot, but I digress. We are sitting here knowing full well that there will be challenges afoot. Real challenges that are before us. So then it has to ask the question, right? What will be the question that I ask is, what promises can this government deliver? Should this government now say, okay, we can still deliver on all of these things? And the question is, have you assessed the cuts? So the Prime Minister Davis says that we are still able to do the cutting of VAT. Cutting VAT percent. Technically, it's a big deal to those people doing the big ticket. If I'm buying a piece of property and it's $100,000, I save $2,000 on my stamp tax. But if you go to the grocery store and you want to buy a $10 item, you're saving on that item, but 20 cents of money, or who are less to use. That's why we call it that, because for the poor, your $1 is your $1. If I have $1,000 as pocket change, when you add to that, to me is not that big of a deal, because pocket change to me is $1,000. Some people borrow $5,000 from them, they don't feel that, right? But VAT itself is regressive. It still keeps and hurts those who have less. Those with more really still don't carry that burden, because VAT on their income. It's on something that is, maybe just a big ticket item. And if we cut that 2%, it benefits those with more, a bit more on big ticket items and purchases. But nonetheless, it could still form as some form of stimulation, right? Some form of stimulation. But significantly, what is very important, we still know that the government needs revenue. The government is working with a budget left to them by the former government. Every government has this. Every government comes in. Now, what normally happens is, though, that the incoming government in the past, three elections, it were closer to the same timeline. So we were talking May. This administration could have formulated an idea with their budget by July, right? So they would at least only have 2 months to worry about how to manage what we have here. This administration has to go through 8 months of not having a budget. 8 months of not having a budget suited to their mandate. So how can they manage what exists? And I would caution this administration on trying to stick steadfast on promises with money that ain't under your control per se. Now, mind you, it is still early. And I still believe that they can give us some better answers to understanding how they're going to manage or work their ideas in this process. But there have been some companies that have seen and experienced a 650% profit increase in shares. And they had a lot to do with food and grocery, what we buy. So if you're making that level of profit, you ain't making no losses. What might be more interesting is if we get to our position where enterprises are more socially aware and not trying to gouge the people. Listen, it was a good time to own a store in this pandemic. I ain't faulting no one for having a good business model. But now we have to get to the things that really affect everyday people. How do we address the cost of living? How do we create more food security so the cost of groceries doesn't have to be high? Can we manipulate the cost of food by being competitors to food? But see, there is a whole industry, a whole market that makes money from our deep desire to import, our nature to bring in, because we have not been intentional with feeding ourselves, reducing the cost. I think there was something when Minister Wells was the Minister of Agriculture at the beginning of their tenure. You remember he came out boldly, said in 2 years, the Bahamas will be able to supply its own chicken in 2 years, 90%. I was like, yeah. Well, we didn't even get to 10%, right? Don't sleep on, well, we had Dorian. Because there was no interest to go ahead and revamp Abaco markets or help them out. When the call was just to help Abaco markets, Abaco chicken, to stay giving ice. Give us fuel for ice. There's no big rush. Chicken farmers here, no big rush. There must be some fundamental changes on how we do business, or we continue to help those who have more, enhance their value and credibility and their satiation, the unsatiated need or greed. 650% profit increase over the pandemic. God bless them. Boy, there's a lot of people who were hungry. So if there's a lot of people who still went hungry, what are we doing? How much money did we spend per week? $1 million per week to feed folk? Remember that? So how is that working out? Now this administration has a budget that still needs to be funded. And they're promising some things. I would caution Ms. Ramming about housing. Don't get excited yet. Don't get excited. These things have to be very intentional. And I hope our new incoming press secretary will definitely be one that gets them on the same page with a message. Because this is not a time to overpromise. Because I assure you, the Bahamian people will be waiting and listening. The prime minister says when the dust settles, he will keep his promise. I don't know what that dust means. What is the dust? Is the dust, the setting up of government? And then the understanding of how will this, you foresee this stimulating the economy, to what extent? What will you do with the lost revenue? Right? 2% is not much, you know. But 2% over the course of all of our purchases for 1 year. Now, it was a commitment only for 1 year. What do they foresee in that 1 year? Will they want that 1 year to start when it's their budget so that it is a plan? So will we be waiting until July of 2022? What year are we in? 21? Yeah. July 2022, so that it can make sense with what they're planning. I have tons of questions, y'all. And the reason why it's important to have these questions is because now we move from saying new day to feeling new day. I don't feel as if there's a need to fear the Bahamian people when we have questions. I feel as if it's a matter of just knowing that you're going to have to, this is the level of conversation, bring us along for the ride. Too many times, and I've seen this analogy in my head, right? Too many times it's like everyone says, come with us for the ride. We're all going in the same direction. You jump in the van and you say, you jump in the van, and before you jump in the van, you say, you going my way? Yeah. Where is my way? And the driver will tell you, this is where we're going. Okay, let's go. And everybody thinking we go in the same direction, but then you realize we made a turn. And then you were probably in the passenger seat and the fellow who was driving said, hold on. I need you to go in the back. We got to pick up somebody. And the person you pick up, you realize their interests tend not to go. They don't live my way. But the driver says, y'all don't ask too many questions. Y'all going for the ride? I said we go in this way, but somehow we never get to where we said we were going. But because the person we picked who was driving told us initially we were going in the same direction, we on this ride. And that's governance a lot, right? That's governance a lot, where they tell us we're on the ride, but the person in the passenger seat who they picked up is now telling them where to go. So now I need, and I think a lot of us need, for our politicians now who have 32 of the 39 seats who are leading and governing, to know that in no way, shape, or form does it mean that we don't have the right not just to ask questions, but to persist until answers are given. And I think that we are smart enough and willing and waiting and ready enough to receive the answers to our questions. Now, this administration, again, has some challenges, but it isn't the challenge before you that concerns me. It is how you view the challenge. Everyone has a challenge. Every person wakes up every day, they got a challenge before them. Every day. But how you view it from a triumphant perspective, I like the swagger of the government. I will be watching, as many have been. I don't know if this government can prove to me how, well, any of their fiscal strategies yet. I like the fact, let me tell you all what I like. I like the fact that Darvill said the hospital needs funding. We know this. Now, what is the strategy? I think it is important for us to be aware that they have a whole 8 months with this budget. How are they going to fund this budget? We got issues with energy. BPL just sent out one good story about how New Providence, everywhere else could get solar, but we can't get solar. Just dismiss the idea because there's not enough space. Really? Take back all that crown line y'all give to people who ain't doing nothing with it. Because you sure ain't giving it to the people who want to do something with it. watching all of this shadiness. Anyways, listen, it's a beautiful day to be alive. I think one of the main things that we must do as a people is always persist and resist the status quo. Persist in our intention and our desire to be a greater country. Resist the inclination to sit back and have someone lead you without intention. You want to fight for your children. Everybody, there's only a few who win when the government gets in. We win when the government enacts policies that brings everyone to equal footing. Areas I will always be watching is education, finance, youth, sports, and culture. Can we separate culture? Can we do that for the culture? Can we begin to do that? I'm watching natural resources. What will that ministry do? Will that ministry prove to be viable, or will it be proven to be something that is totally unnecessary? We will find out. This is a new day now. And I think when you see 65% of the electorate was the only amount that voted, the new day is there was a protest vote. The new day is a lot of people aren't in to the hither and the yon. That's what the new day is. And that we may start to see a trend where less and less are showing interest if this progressive Liberal Party government does not stand up and show and prove itself it's not the same old. I don't care how vigorous the FNM will be. And I don't care how much new there's going to be with this administration. The Bahamian people, it will get worse every election. And I think that's why it is incumbent on this government to not just do as they say, but to even be more aggressive in their style of leadership, in transparency, accountability, in the quality of leadership, in the quality of conversation. I think it's more imperative that they get ahead of themselves. Don't shoot yourself in the foot like the former administration. I said they shot themselves so much in the foot that they had no leg to stand on. That's what the former administration did. They couldn't get out of their own way. This administration, they had a good campaign. They led smarter. It looked different. It smelled it. It sounded different. Now they got to show up and be ahead of the time. But we got a lot of other stuff to talk about today because they want keep promises. Just make sure you can deliver when you say it. Don't say nothing. Don't set the expectation high and you can't deliver. Minimum wage, we going up to 250? Increase that. 210 ain't working. But now do your metrics. How does that stimulate the economy? It's a new day. All right. We believe you. It's a new day. And it's really a new day for the Bahamian people. When we come back, my good friend C.A. Nuru will be joining us on the other side of the break. Had a great opportunity to visit a local business. C.A. Nuru finally paid for my Kong salad. God is good. And then we also have, a vibrant opposition. The former prime minister, Dr. Hubert Miniz, said that they will be a vibrant opposition. I like that. That's powerful. Also, there was a little video circulating. And I'll share that story with you on the other side of the break. We will be back. You're listening to The Hit Back with Nahaja Black, Guardian Radio 96.9 FM.
About the COVID vaccine raffle, if you are vaccinated against COVID-19, you can enter to win amazing prizes like food store gift certificates, hotel stays, beach excursions, and so much more. Even if you are previously vaccinated, you can still enter to win. The COVID vaccine is free, safe, and protects you from severe COVID-19 infections. Don't delay. Get vaccinated today and enter to win. Visit www.baxbahamas.com to register.
What happened to you? You look like you lost your paycheck.
Man, I just realized I got scammed out of a bunch of money. They said I won this contest and just needed me to send them some money so I could collect. I mean, to expedite something. Or was it to smooth the process?
Man, you're smarter than that. Protect yourself against scams and fraud by following these tips. If you know you didn't enter a competition, you can't win. Never pay to receive a cash prize. If you're being asked, you're being scammed. Check trusted internet sites for verification of information given to you. Do not give your banking details to people you don't know. If it sounds too good to be true, it is. Monitor your bank account regularly for any questionable transactions.
Get more information at GetMoneySmartBahamas.com.
Baja sugar, sugar, let's get sugary. Softer, smoother, and amazing skin. Oh, Baja sugar, sugar, we're the sugar ladies. Giving you skin soft as a baby's. Goodbye hair, we'll take good care of you.
Come visit us at Bahar Treat Spa on East Bay Street. Contact us at 323-6711 or visit us online at www.baharretreat.com.
When I had got prostate cancer, my family didn't know if I was going to live at Cancer Treatment Centers of America. Within days, I got an appointment. They presented me with treatment options and they set up a robotic prostatectomy. When my scans came back, there are no signs of cancer. They don't see you as a number, they see you as a part of family. I'm going on with my life. It's a real gift.
Call us at Cancer Treatment Centers of America.
You invest in your children, your home, and your community. But are you investing in your financial future? At CFAL, we specialize in investment management, retirement planning, mutual funds, and private wealth management. Our team of experts never stops helping you plan for tomorrow. Because tomorrow begins today. Call us at 502-7010 to see what our financial advisors can do for you. CFAL, growing wealth for future generations.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
You're listening to The Hit Back with Nahaj Black. My good friend, C.A. Nuri, joining me on the show today. C.A., how are you?
Good. I was concerned that my computer just went blank. And I said, oh, you just introduced me and bang, I gone. So I wasn't sure what I was on or off. But I'm doing well. Today is a new day and a good day. And I'm glad I'm here to celebrate such.
Yeah. You know, okay. So we got some new emergency orders, amendments or changes.
Yes.
Actually from the Ministry of Health, actually. So I want to do that first.
No more curfew. No?
We got some new stuff. Some new stuff. Yeah. Because, okay. You know, we could get to the fact that, you know, you finally came through on the bet. But thank you so much. My comm salad was legitimately awesome. Now, I want to share this. So we got some new information with this emergency order, all right? And the emergency, this is from the Minister of Health. I want to make sure that it's on screen so we all can see it. Okay, so this is from the Ministry of Health, all right? And it goes, the amended orders make the following changes. So following discussions with the healthcare professionals and with cabinet approval, the Prime Minister, the Honorable Philip E. Davis, QC, MP, has signed the following order made under the Emergency Powers, COVID-19 Pandemic Management and Recovery Number 2. Starting off, we never get a whole letter. Normally, the Emergency Powers just has come with a one-pager of the actual Emergency Powers document, but not the full document. And they wouldn't give you really a rundown of what has been the changes, just the subsection. It's weird. I like this already. This one is helpful. So it says the amended orders make the following changes to the existing emergency powers order as follows. You ready, CA?
Yep.
The order removes the requirement for a travel health visa for inter-island travel within the Bahamas. No more health visas for inter-island travel within the Bahamas. That's one. Two, vaccinated persons traveling inter-island from New Providence and Grand Bahama will now be required to produce a negative result of a rapid antigen test of the type approved by the Ministry of Health. And if not vaccinated, travelers are required to produce a negative result of the RT-PCR test at the point of embarkation to the operator of the airline or vessel on which they are traveling. You get that?
Makes sense.
Okay. Let me read it again. Vaccinated persons traveling inter-island from New Providence and Grand Bahama will now only be required to produce a negative result from a rapid antigen test of the type approved by the Ministry of Health. And if non-vaccinated, right, travelers are required to produce a negative result of the RT-PCR test at the point of embarkation to the operator of the airline or vessel in which they're traveling. Number three, for persons traveling inter-island from any other islands of the Bahamas, only a negative result of an antigen test of the type approved by the Ministry of Health is required. For persons traveling inter-island from any other islands apart from New Providence and Grand Bahama, only a negative result of an antigen test of the type approved by the Ministry of Health is required. The requirement, number four, for secondary testing for inter-island travelers is now removed. The requirement for secondary testing for inter-island travelers is now removed. Number five, the travel health visa is still required for Bahamian citizens, residents, and visitors entering the Bahamas. So we know, number one, it removes the travel health visa for inter-island travel within the Bahamas. However, it is still required in point five for Bahamian citizens, residents, and visitors entering the Bahamas. Number six, payment of the travel health visa fee is no longer required for Bahamian citizens and residents returning to the Bahamas. Can I get a hallelujah? Can I get a hallelujah? Can I get a hallelujah? The payment of the travel health visa fee is no longer required for Bahamian citizens and residents returning to the Bahamas. The amended order is attached for ease of reference. What a time. What a time. I like that already. I like it already. Feels like a new day. What do you think, buddy?
I think it's good. I think it's feasible. See, we complain too much. So I'm trying
to pause. What are your thoughts?
Before I start speaking. This is good. This is good because I thought it was too expensive for Bahamians in terms of who life is going inter-island, especially people who live in Acklands and Miguana. They go back and forth all the time. And this testing and having this travel visa was expensive. The idea that I must pay to come home, right, have an extra visa and I'm returning home was kind of odd to me. So I'm glad that the government has done away with that. So these are things I am celebrating, and I can say that this is a good thing that is being implemented and something to be praised, right? Mm-hmm. This is my concern. The Dr. Nakia Forbes has some concerns that more needs to be done.
Yes.
More needs to be done. And that resonates in my mind every time I read one of these COVID protocols, right? Because I want to see what is more that needs to be done. And I see that this order here isn't more that needs to be done.
No, what this order is seemingly addressing more things that have to do with health visa, inter-island travel.
I understand.
And testing. That's what this is. That's all this is.
My point is, what is more urgent? More that needs to be done? Or we can do both. We can do both. And I'm not saying, like I said, I don't want to debase this because I love this, right? Mm-hmm. But I think this needs to be in tangent at the same time as more needs to be done. Mm-hmm. Because I'm terrified of COVID, right? Mm-hmm. I think COVID is urgent, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't see that quick response that I anticipated. Mind you, they could be working behind the scenes and meetings and things to be done. But if you said you met with the COVID team, the doctors, right? Mm-hmm. I expect to understand what are the more that needs to be done. And that should be in front of everything. And if it cannot be in front of anything, it needs to be in tangent with this order to say, well, we're coming up with this. And at the same time, these are the more things that need to be done to keep Bohemian safe. And it doesn't seem as if keeping Bohemian safe is urgent enough at this present time.
Yeah, you know, I will say this. They paid more attention to it than the previous administration. I do believe that they know that it is urgent. And I base that on their presence right now. They've been there, Minister of Health, Prime Minister. Today, Darvill saying we need to put more funding in it. I am with you. What are those things that they're going to do? Like I said, next week.
Mahaja, and you said that by being present isn't more that needs to be done.
No.
More that needs to be done, that's be tangible. And if there is no tangible things that you can tell me, then more that needs to be done isn't being done. And that's where we are. We
need I understand
the power. Is it urgent? And if it is urgent, what are the tangible things? And if you can, just name me one tangible thing that you can say that will coincide with Dr. Nakia Forbes' more needs to be done. Just one, and I will yield. I'm sorry?
No, I'm with you.
So there isn't none as yet.
This right now, so far, there isn't a more that needs to be done thing.
Okay, that's all I'm talking about.
No, that's a given.
You're right on that. And I'm panicking. Like I said, I don't think we're taking this COVID serious enough to know that this can completely ruin the Bahamas and how we approach things. This needs to be the first and urgent. I understand this. I appreciate
this. This is what you call the low-hanging fruit, Cecil. This is the low-hanging fruit right here. Okay. I consider this the low-hanging fruit. These are things that you can do right now that gives you more days. Okay. That's low-hanging fruit. I think we have to know, I am with you on what are we doing? What are we going to do? Right? We know that we need to ramp up vaccinations or hope that more people get vaccinated. But in the interim, how are we going to fund this crisis? What are the things that we need to do? And the only leeway or reason why I give leeway right now is because they still have to learn this medical position from all angles. Not just the people you meet in that room, but then you got to talk to the nurses. You got to talk, get on the ground. What are the financials from it, from the Ministry of Finances side? And then from the public health side, Darvill said something, Minister of Health Darvill, Minister Darvill said that the hospital needs, we need more money. We need more money. Okay, now this is where finance, economic affairs have to come together and say, this is where you're going to get the money from. So he's made an announcement that we need more money. And I'm waiting for them to tell me where they can get this money from. Because guess what? That's the big kicker, because we have to be realistic. And this is the same leeway we gave the former administration at the beginning. They had, that's when we say, that, and they definitely was dollar whining. It took them way too long to figure out the cupboards were bare, but that sure ain't stopped the big spending, borrowing, and blah, blah, blah. Long story short is, they have to go in and assess the financial situation. The pre-election report, I think, was one of the greatest things we've ever done. And I think that we're growing into maturity. Thank God for the Fiscal Responsibility Act, even if the former government didn't live up to it as well as they should. They put something there that was worthwhile that we can build on. But they need to figure out how much money they got. This is 1 week. They need to find out where they're going to get the money from to do this. That's why I said at the beginning, they're promising some stuff. But do they know how much money they actually got? And how are they going to use the funds that they have? Where are they going to get the money from? We needed to borrow, and it what, $700 million more? Where are we getting, who we go into with being in junk bond status? How is that going to manage? They are facing some things. It's going to be hard to carry this through. But that's why I give them more than 1 more week, you know. This is the low-hanging fruit to me. This, to me, is good business. You're smart. If you're in politics, go low-hanging. Now they have to come back to us, and probably in the next 10 days, business days, and give us a true, true plan. Because they can't even give us free testing right now. I hear all of that, and I see that.
And Naja, I don't expect free testing until maybe next year sometime. But that's just me guessing a date. Hopefully it'll be sooner. Mm-hmm. My other concern is, Nahaja, right? We had an election. We had some persons partying and having fun. We haven't had the fallout, the numbers regarding the COVID in terms of the spread, right? Mm-hmm. And with the government changing the rules in terms of extending curfew, the COVID test. Mind you, like I said, I understand it. I'm not disputing that I don't understand it. My point is, if there is a spike, God forbid, if there is a spike, they will now have to own it, because people will now question whether it was from the election or whether it's from the changing of the rules, the relaxation of the rules.
Yep. Right?
And yep. Whereas I heard them saying that, yes, they met with doctor officials, medical officials, right? Mm-hmm. I haven't seen any meeting because, you know, they have cameras going everywhere, right? I haven't seen anyone speaking to the medical officials, Dr. Nakia Forbes, Dr. McMillan, right? To say, hey, y'all give us the guideline on what is it that you say that we need more of, because we are about to relax some things. I want to know if these relaxation is going to, and do you think it's going to impact the numbers? Mm-hmm. Now, from what they're saying, they should not impact the numbers at all. But if there is a spike, someone have to be blamed. And if it's not the government, it has to be the medical officials who give permission to change.
Exactly. And listen, my thing is that's why I always say, you know, we sit on the outside, right? We sit on the outside and we pray to God that they're using all of their good senses and listening to everyone at the table. One of the critiques that was often said, where we're like, okay, so COVID has come out at 10 a.m. What is the data that supports us having curfew at 10? I've at one point thought it was suspicious that we would close every other business, and you could spend your money at the hotel until then. But the hotels themselves don't want too many Bahamians in there when they got guests in there. So they like the curfew. They could get your Bahamian dollar. You could add to the restaurant eateries. You could do all of that good stuff. But 10 o'clock, you got to go. And yet their businesses will continue, right? So they weren't concerned about COVID in their facility, but we were concerned about COVID in country after 10. So what is the data? Now, that was something we never got. So is the government saying now that they looked at the fact that we had no data and changed the curfew? Listen, let me tell you one of the things. We need data. The Bahamian people need data. We want to know why you're making the decisions, because I also find it curious that we would say there is a curfew, but police can't stop you if you're past the curfew. You know, I'm like, okay, but how does that make sense? So there's the curfew even real? That to me was a nonsensical thing.
It's a snuff enough, I guess. It doesn't exist. It does not exist at all. It's only in Big Bird's mind.
So the snuffy ain't real?
Snuffy is not real. The curfew is not real. You can party until 4 in the morning and the police blow when you pass them.
That part there makes no sense to me now. Like, hold on now. We got a curfew or we ain't got a curfew? What is real? Right? What is real? So what Dr. Nakia Forbes has always said, and this is where the government will have its challenges, right? Where the government may have its challenges. Because what Dr. Nakia said is, we need to test more. This administration said they're going to do free testing. I had someone ask me a question recently saying, well, that's just silly, because then what are you going to do? Have people test, all the time, every time? People will test when they feel sick. What we want people to do, though, is when they test or when they need to get tested. If you feel any way, you feel sick or you feel like you've been attached to someone or you know someone is affected, I would prefer when people get tested, they're not getting tested on rapid antigen tests. Or if they are, those numbers are put into our health system. And if it's free, then it doesn't matter. I think you go with the PCR test. If it's free, you go with a better test to get the better results on whether someone is positive or negative. The reason for that is we want all of that data in the Ministry of Health. All of that data in the Ministry of Health then gives us the ability to chart, to determine through plotting, where are the clusters? What community has the cluster? Do we have to go and have a medical van or a vaccination van or caravan to this community? Do we need to put up some sort of health tent or center in that community just to help curb the spread? Like, what do we do? All of this is why you do free testing. Free testing isn't just to say free testing and, oh, you're positive. But then we need that data. Then we need quarantine spaces. This is what the government now has to do.
I have a question for you, Nahaja. I something you just said I didn't realize, and I wanted to put it to you so you can explain it to me. when you say free testing, you mean this was in a rapid antigen you were talking about? This was the PCR?
This got to be the PCR, right? Or is the Ministry of Health, check this out. That's why it's important to ask that. Because right now, if it's free testing and the government is doing it, then all results will go into, we assume, into the health bank. But we know that the rapid antigen test is not as effective as the RT-PCR test. We know this. We're just trying to act like we don't know. We try to act like, oh, the PCR, the rapid antigen test all of a sudden is so much better. We know it ain't the same as the RT-PCR, hence why the RT-PCR costs more. Come on now, everybody, tell the truth, shame the devil. And if you went in COVID positive or you went into the hospital, they do not use a rapid antigen test. They use an RT-PCR. So we don't play this game about rapid antigen tests. You've got to go with the RT-PCR. That is what goes into the Ministry of Health and gives us the accurate and the best data possible. We have to be very much strategic with this system. It is not something that can be, well, you come out today and you jump up and say, hey, this is what, you better say what you're going to do, be intentional with your plan, and have calibrated the success or failure of your plan. So that when you put your plan to the Bahamian people, you and I, Cecil, everybody is listening on air, that way you can articulate this idea, this strategy. Give us your foreshadowing results of this idea. So that when it hits a marker, you could say, listen, we were hoping at phase one of this, we would have had X, Y, and Z amount vaccinated. We've seen that that's not the case. Or we would have expected to see the curve being flattened by this point based on these metrics. What we see now is that we need to adjust them. You speak to people with sense and get us in on the journey. Then you find yourself less being considered an ire of, you know, because you just ignore us and you don't put us on this ride. This administration really needs to think of its strategy. It really needs to plan its strategy. Don't get too eager and want to jump up and say, we doing this today. Make sure what you do today is something that is sustainable, that we can use it, work it. Because the last administration, buddy, they was ad hoc. When the problem come, they run out that fire, but forgot that the other place was burning at the same time. They could not figure out how to do things with a serious, holistic approach. And that is, you got to be really, really on it. You know, you got to really be looking at us as sensible people. And that is how I think you approach this issue. Most Bahamians understand we are in a financial crunch. You came in with some time.
And Nahaja, whilst you were talking, I was saying, let me do a quick math there. I brought up a calculator there. And I, just for a throat number, there's about 400,000 of us mm-hmm. in the Bahamas. Mm-hmm. And just using that number, of course, you know, it's people, anyway, 400,000 of us, right? Mm-hmm. And let's say $100 for the PCR test. Mm-hmm. That's $400 million.
Yeah, well, that's if you're buying it.
These are big numbers. I'm not saying that this is exact math. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying the type of numbers that we're dealing with, right? $400 million, and that's just one test. How many tests do we need to take? I was saying about 3 or 4 per month, each person, just so we understand who, because, you know, every 2 weeks, the COVID exposes itself.
So, yeah, I don't think it would, do you think that's how they would run it?
I would need at least 2 or 3 per month.
It isn't to see if, COVID is with us. COVID isn't leaving the world. So you will go, listen, the thing is, right? People are going to get COVID. You're going to get it. It's to some extent.
We need to see the spread. Like I said, this right. person tested today.
But how you can let...
2 weeks later, he got positive. We need to see the dynamics on what happened during that
but
time.
Now what you're talking about is scientific research.
Yes.
Now you have what you can call your small sample group. That is an entire country by and large. Now you're creating a sample group. You make a smaller sample group to determine how, what is that... Like, we've already gotten data to the level of positivity ratings based on the tests that we receive, that we do today. So I can open up a chart done by the good Alex, Alexander, what is Alexander's last name? I can't remember.
Hannah,
right? That is very much given with great data, gives us the positivity rating based on the amount of tests. So that gives us that understanding or expression on information that comes to us. But what you're talking about is a subset. That is something that you do as a statistical analysis of a group. You create that science. But what I believe that the strategy is with the free testing is, if you need to test,
Only if you need to test.
If you need to test. When else are you going to test? You're going to test because it's Tuesday? You're going to test if you need to test.
I was going to test because I say I went to the fish fry and I wasn't sure. I wasn't wearing my mask. Therefore, I should take the test.
And why aren't you wearing your mask? That's a whole other kettle of fish.
I wasn't wearing my mask because I need to drink my strawberry.
And all of this is now where there's a lot of things that go together with this process. There's a lot of things. That educational campaign, right? Yes, sorry. And then I need to give the calls. We're going to take a break because we have to take calls as well. But we have to take a break because there's a lot that has to go into dealing with COVID-19. It is far more than just, I believe, one item. It is this holistic approach because it is not going anywhere. It ain't going anywhere. And we're going to have to live with this thing. So how do we get businesses open? How do we get people back to work? How do we be socially responsible individuals ourselves to help reduce the spread? And how do we make sure that our healthcare facilities are up to par if folks get sick again? This is a whole national discussion, you know? So we'll take a quick break. C.A. Nuri is joining me today. You're listening to The Hit Back with Nahaja Black, Guardian Radio. We'll be back right after this.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Nahaja Black.
Hey.
It's the Hit Back.
Hey.
With Nahaja Black.
Hey.
It's the Hit Back.
Hey.
With Nahaja Black.
Hey.
It's the Hit Back.
Hey.
With Nahaja Black.
We're back. You're listening to The Hit Back with Nahaja Black, Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. I hope that everybody's doing well, taking care of yourself, living your best life today. So we got a lot of stuff going on. And I wonder if do I look like everything is moving slowly?
Yes. You seem to have a sudden drawl.
Yeah, it does seem so. All right. So hopefully we get this resolved as soon as possible. I know, and I think we'll have some callers soon. Okay, but I want to bring on, and we're going to switch gears just a little bit, Cecil, because on top of that, there's also a lot of questions. Man, look here, man. We be talking money now. The government and all of its promises are there. Even when we talk about VAT and that reduction, et cetera, I want to bring on someone who I respect highly. And Cecil, because he knows who it is fixing his collar now. He wants to look right.
Yes, I was trying to look
the guest,
special.
Right? He wants to look like a sensible person for my guest, who is an A1 rating individual, right? Mr. Gowan Bo, CEO at Fidelity. And so, Cecil, I'm going to move you to the bottom there because, you know, you're not as, you know, you gotta get reorganized.
I know he's light skinned, so I understand. I shall even go in the background. You can put me in the background.
I can put you in the background. Let me leave you in the back. Yeah. Okay. You know, see, that's how we do. We just throw him in the back. Gowan, how good. Are you, my friend?
Not too bad. Keeping well, which is so important these days. And, you know, looking forward to, I guess, our development as a country because rising tide floats all boats.
All boats.
So optimism.
Yeah. And I love that word, optimism. I love, forgive me, I know I'm having some sort of internet challenges, so forgive me there. You know, Gowan, you are one of those people who are highly respected. I respect you very much for your candor and for your intellect. I believe that you're a person who just sees it, who cuts through all of the mustard and says, okay, listen, it sounds good, but here is X, Y, and Z. As someone who works within the financial sector, you see the fluctuations, you see the investments, you see the savings, all of these things from your position. Right now, one of the big things that was talked about recently is the state of the Bahamian economy, the downgrade. Some would even argue, or has even shared a thought that perhaps we are now going to a place where we're insolvent, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's the terminology that's best used. What would you say Gawin Bo, Chief CEO of Fidelity, good man. What would you say is the state of the Bahamian economy, just bar none?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, we always speak about crossroads, right? And I the best way of saying it is we've already shot through the crossroad and heading down the wrong direction. But we haven't yet arrived or hit, you know, the dead end that is a catastrophe. We have an opportunity to turn around, get back to the crossroad and get ourselves onto the right path that we need to do. The Bahamas is, and if we separate the people and the government just for a period of time, we sometimes as a people don't appreciate that we create what it is that we criticize in government. And what I mean by that is government is only a microcosm of our society. So when we look at the borrowing of the government, right, look to the consumer borrowing of the society. Are we borrowing money more now in this generation time to build homes, invest, or are we borrowing money to consume? So when government is borrowing money to pay its bills, is that any different from how society is behaving? When we look at saying, are we looking forward in terms of how we progress as a nation, right? Are we looking and worrying about tomorrow only? Because I remember speaking with one of the old original freedom fighters back from the 60s, Charles Carter, and he and I were together one time. And we saw one of his employees, and he said, you know, Gowan, they took a salary advance in order to come over for Christmas shopping. Say, she got more bags than me. And you know what? Next month, she don't know how she can pay her electricity bill, right? Mm-hmm. But he say, because in the Bahamas, we believe we're a Christian nation, she's saying God will provide in a month's time, right? but that is how we tend to live. Because if you ask most Bahamians, what are their 5-year, 10-year, 15-year, even their generation plan in terms of the things that they want to have achieved and now taking steps to do so, not many would be able to articulate. I'm not saying many haven't thought about it, but they haven't put it in paper. They haven't put pen to paper. Let's turn to the government. Do we have a plan that goes beyond what they see as an election cycle?
That's right.
We continue to look at it only for tomorrow, only for, well, how do I serve my own interests in the next short term? And when we do that, we miss something. That what our forefathers taught us that we have forgotten, unfortunately, they were investing in the next generation. So how many of our political leaders, as an example, that came about in the 50s and 60s, whose parents had never gotten an education, but they had the opportunity to go to grammar school in terms of the government high, go abroad, and how many of their parents were, I'm going to say, semi-skilled at best laborers in various industries, but they invested the money in their education because they said, the way my next generation is going to elevate is by being better than I am. So I have to sacrifice today. Do we do that now? So do we say, okay, you know what? I have to seek less or spend less now so that I have the ability to have my children advance. And I'll tell you that there's a very serious situation that I see today. And I look at my children and I say, if I don't give them a head start, they are going to have a rough time.
Yep.
Right? But now that tells me I got to give them a head start. So just seeing that it isn't solving it, I have to then take the actions to do so. So we as a government have to have a national development plan. So everything, you know, the Bible always teaches us where there is no vision, the people perish. And what that means in very basic terms is, we have to see where we're going, but also we have to have a map to get there.
Yeah.
And so we have to start doing things that I'm going to say are analysis and evidence based to allow us to really critically say when we failed or succeeded, right? Mm-hmm. Right now, we are in a world for several cycles of elections where there has been a reason why we didn't achieve something.
That's right. No data.
There's never been, you know, for quite a while, there's not been, this is what we've achieved that you can empirically validate, right? Mm-hmm. It is not where we're saying that, you know, we mapped out a plan that you as the citizens can actually watch and measure us against and then say, yes, you have, no, you haven't. Or even say, well, you haven't, but you've told me why you haven't and what you're doing differently in mm-hmm. order to get there as quickly as you can.
Yep.
And sometimes I think, you know, we allow government to be the area that is excused. Let me know, in our private life, we wouldn't have the same. If you don't pay your bills on time, what happens?
Okay.
As a citizen, right? Uh-huh. Your electricity off.
Lights off, water off, phone off,
right?
Everything.
The mechanic ain't fixing your car.
That's right.
The plumber not coming to sort out that leak because you ain't paying from the last time mm-hmm. that he was there. But government runs its bills and says, well, trust me, I'm gonna pay you. When we go in and government says, well, I need to borrow more money, it is saying, again, trust me, I can pay you back, as opposed to laying out what me and you would have to walk into a bank or any investor mm-hmm. with a prospectus.
Yes.
We have to actually say, this is the trajectory. These are the projections. These are the forecasts. But you know what? These ain't the forecasts that I just say. I have someone independently who has now validated the inputs, the assumptions mm-hmm. that, yes, none of us have a crystal ball, but I didn't just write anything. Because they say, paper ain't ever see a pen it didn't like, right? So in reality, we're able to put those elements together. So, you know, I say to persons, the one thing is, do not ever look down on the prospects of your country. So I am always optimistic, mm-hmm. but I am also realistic that we have a tremendous amount of work to do. We have gone down the wrong path. It has not been one vehicle that has carried us down the wrong path. Unfortunately, there have been many drivers over the various decades in different ways. And so now we have to really look at how we turn this ship around, get back to home port before we take off into the next destination, that we are clear on where we're going and how we're going to get there.
If you're just tuning in, Gawan Bo joining us on the show here today. So, Gawan, I want to ask you this question. Okay, so the government is promising, and the Prime Minister says, after the dust settles, we'll reduce VAT, as promised, 10% to 10%, from 12 to 10% for 1 year. I gather that they see this as a form of stimulus, right? Whereas I think of it, okay, that's a stimulus maybe for bigger ticket items, not necessarily for, you know, mom and pop at the store, right? Where do you see this as a stimulus? Do you believe that it comes with something else from your perspective?
You know, what I would say is, before it is done, I can't say that the intent behind it is noble or not. And I cannot say that it will work or not, because there hasn't been the supporting information to allow that assessment to be made. Mm-hmm. So we have some realities, and let's set those out. Mm-hmm. The first one is that we are running a significant deficit, which means that revenue shortfalls will increase that deficit. Mm-hmm. The deficits we've been running have led to us in a debt situation where our debt is now equal to the size of our economy.
Yep.
And so we have a debt to GDP ratio of, you know, near 100%, no matter which numbers we use. I mean, we could game and gimmick that, but let's just say we have a high debt. So mm-hmm. we know that if we're running greater deficits, then that's only increasing the debt. It's not improving it.
Right.
We have the social inequities, because we have a system where the tax system is regressive. And so those who have the least ability to pay are called upon to pay the most relative to their income. And so when we look at solutions, we have to be very careful that we do so on an empirical basis that says, I have at least done sufficient to say that I have studied the sensitivities, meaning that if I change, you know, life, and this is the extent of my Latin, citrus paribus, life is not citrus paribus. Not everything else stays the same. When I move one variable, the reality is multiple mm-hmm. other things move as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I need to have the model or the data and analysis that says I have changed them. I have played with the assumptions. I have tweaked one side to see what happens on the other mm-hmm. so that when I make this commitment or I action this commitment rather, that I am doing so in a responsible manner that says, one, it is either revenue neutral or revenue positive. Two, that it has a mission behind it, meaning that you use the word stimulus. Mm-hmm. The question I would ask is, stimulus means government subvention.
Yep.
Now, is this intended to be government contributing? So just like unemployment benefits, are we going to cut those back and this is the stimulus that replaces it?
Very good question.
When we look at the food assistance, this is the stimulus that replaces the food assistance and those areas. So there's a lot to be articulated. I am one that believes, you know, give them an opportunity to do so.
Mm-hmm.
I will spank them and say they've fallen into the same trap, which is I will make a political promise and then figure out how I do it later.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. But the reality is, I think that, you know, if we have confidence in the professionals that should be around them and the government relies on them, then they will either be able to say, well, I've done the modeling and I understand this is how much it's going to cost,
mm-hmm.
or it's going to be neutral, or it's actually going to be a benefit. There's some theory or expectation that when I lower the cost of items, consumption increases. The issue I have with that is that's in normal times.
That's right.
In these times, I don't have people that have tremendous amount of savings. There is a large part of our society that live paycheck to paycheck. So what has been happening to those paychecks in the last 18 months?
Mm.
There have been few and far between for some.
Mm-hmm.
So lowering the cost doesn't change my ability to consume, because the truth of the matter is I can buy more items with the little bit of the money that I have, but I'm not going to spend more money because I don't have more money.
Mm-hmm.
And so it has to come along with saying that I'm stimulating economic activity. So I have employment, I have the ability to consume. But it also is, you have to be mindful that those who have savings, one, have demonstrated the discipline to accumulate those savings up to this point in time. So what is their thought process? I don't know how long this is going to last. So am I going to go out and enjoy myself because things cheaper? No, I can still bunker down because mm-hmm. I may have to ride this savings for a longer period of time.
That's right.
So if persons were to ask me, my advice would simply be, we need to look back at what was the original model, which was very limited exemptions. And there was a principle behind that. Not only in simplicity, meaning that if I didn't have exemptions, I didn't have to worry about the lobbyists and who asking for this and the next. But it was simple, meaning the system of administration was simplified.
That's right.
Secondly, when you look at exemptions, it is not targeted. So when you say that breadbasket items do not attract VAT, some persons may say, well, why is Gowan benefiting from that? Because his income is one where he could afford to pay the VAT on that mm-hmm. one. Whereas the person who is on minimum wage, right, they're struggling. And so, yes, you say it's a benefit, but have I now given the benefit to who deserves it, or have I given it to persons who don't deserve it?
That's right.
Whereas I can look at the system and say everyone pays the same on all items,
mm-hmm.
but the theoretical excess I get from those who could afford it, I redirect to those who cannot. And that's going back to the social services program, the conditional cash transfer program, that is saying that when I look at the economic circumstances, it is better that I target my subvention to mm-hmm. those who need it.
That's right.
Don't give a waiver that is all-encompassing.
That's right.
Because the man who should be paying, don't let him get off.
Exactly. No, it makes good sense.
So if we want to reduce, now they didn't say they would or they wouldn't. If we want to reduce VAT, I would really say we should contemplate going back to the limited to no exemptions. Now, you're going to get some political
and limited outcry to no exemptions in what sphere?
Meaning that the ones that were introduced, when the VAT rate was introduced to in 2018 to 12%, it was increased to 12% with the introduction of exemptions on breadbasket items, on various other items that were not previously VAT exempt. So if you put down and just your, not even a quadratic equation, a very simple equation, if I did not increase exemptions, did I need to put the rate to 12%? And what I did was I increased the cost of items that are not exempt.
That's right.
Because I compensated by saying that where I could have gone up by a smaller amount on all items, I went up by a larger amount. And I've always cautioned, be careful about creating a class system through your tax system, meaning that if you have made it such that the only thing I can afford is breadbasket items, I can't afford a chocolate bar as a treat for my child because the chocolate bar now has 12% instead of what was 7.5% across the board, or maybe 10% as they're speaking. Now, am I not actually wedging even further the have and the have-nots? Because I am now saying that if you don't have, you are relegated to this aisle.
Yeah.
Right? As opposed to saying, well, everyone pays the same rate. It is simplified, but you who need the assistance, I will redirect it directly to you. I will make sure that you have dignity in the manner of saying, well, okay, I can now start to buy the chocolate. I can get the ice cream for my child because it isn't gone up exponentially. But to the simple answer, I would hope that the before implementing it, and I think the Prime Minister was wise in saying this much, that when the dust settles, I interpret that to mean once we actually have a sufficient grounding, right? Then secondly, we are going to honor our commitment, but it didn't say how and, you know, what will come along with the reduction. And so I would hope that it is through the empirical modeling and saying that we will not do anything that would worsen our fiscal circumstances whilst at the same time seeking to stimulate activity, appreciating that, you know, this is a little bit of the chicken and the egg. Will I get consumption until I get economic growth? And if I don't get economic growth, will I get consumption? So, you know, it is having to walk and chew gum.
Someone asked a question here. I thought it was really good. How do you balance it? People are crying for real wage increases, but that has potential to decrease labor demand with no way for the multiplier effect to compensate for this, especially if households are mismanaging. And I gather you understand that.
Yeah, I understand. You know, and this is one of those that, again, requires a little bit of patience. So less haste, more speed. Meaning that we automatically jump to what minimum wage is as opposed to going to the value proposition. Meaning that how do we get people more productive so that their employer are able to pay more, not by virtue of imposition by law, but by the fact that they're able to generate more activity in order to pay for it. If I have a situation where I am not able to pay more in total salary, meaning that if I have my sales that are 10,000 and my salary bill is 5,000, if the cost of each individual goes up, but the 10,000 doesn't increase, what's going to happen? It simply means I only can pay 5,000. I'm going to employ less. I am going to ask the less number of persons to do more.
That's right.
Whereas if I can sort of marry the value proposition of saying, well, what I'm going to do is increase the skills and productivity of the workforce so that the value of their labor is not contingent on minimum wage. The value of their labor is actually higher producing.
Yes.
Right? And so if it is higher producing, now let me be candid. There are employers, and I am a former head of the employer representative organization. There are employers who will seek to take advantage of employees. And sadly, there are the rotten few that spoil the bunch. But by and large, most employers understand one thing, that if I don't have a happy workforce and a satisfied workforce, it costs me far more to replace that workforce than it does to increase their compensation.
That's right.
And we have to start getting to a model where our payment or our compensation is tied to the performance of the organization with which we work. I think there's too much of a disconnect that employees come in and say, well, I don't care if we make a dollar today or not. You just better have my salary. Well, let's change that a little bit. Let's say, okay, let's encourage more businesses to say that you compensate persons by getting shares in the organization. Doesn't have to be large amounts. But you now shift from being solely an employee to being an owner of the business in which you work.
Yes.
And so if it does well, you get dividends.
That's right.
If it does not do well, right, you may not even have a job because it is going to have losses and the, and the business can't survive. So when we start to, I'm going to say, wed the idea of employment with entrepreneurship and ownership, then people think differently. And so we have to not look at it as saying the minimum wage change is the panacea. It has to be the productivity. It has to be the actual output. It has to be that we are giving businesses the opportunity to expand and increase revenues so that there is an ability to pass more on to the actual workforce. Like I said, it is cheaper. It's like they say with the wife, right? I can be getting myself in trouble now. It's cheaper to keep her, right? So
Don't lose it.
You know, the ones there, and the cost of a divorce is far more. So that's just like in business, right? And all fun and jokes aside, right? A quality employer, or let me put it even more pointedly, a quality investor knows that it is about maximizing return, not minimizing costs.
Okay, Gowan Bo, hold on. I have a question for you before I let you go, right? Bankruptcy, credit bureau, we are moving into this sphere. We're going to be instituting our own credit ratings bureau. And as someone who is the CEO of a bank or a bank, this sort of facility, I think that we still as Bahamians, as the persons at the end of this legislation, this new mandate here, are still unaware of what is going on here. What level will we be affected and how concerned should we be? Or is this good and bad? I think this is good and bad. It'll be bad at the beginning, but I think great in the long run for a lot of things in terms of access to liquidity, et cetera. But what is going on here?
Yeah, I would say that I don't know how more information is bad, meaning that it is going to be bad for persons who have not been truthful in the information they have provided, because it's going to now shine a light on the cockroach, right?
Yep.
So that's the part that we have to appreciate, that when we talk about credit bureau access to information, what this is now doing is saying that for persons who have good credit history, meaning they pay their bills on time, they've borrowed and don't miss payments, they are actually sometimes hampered by the individual who don't pay their bills, who jumps from bank to bank until, you know, they stop paying that bank and jump to another one because there's not a mechanism to determine whether or not they've left obligations behind. So the innocent have actually suffered more for the guilty up to this point in time. So we are going to be separating the good from the bad. The process itself is one that takes time because it is one accumulating the data. So there's, you know, it's an automation, it's a digital process. It is one that means the information has to be available at the push of a button. So there is a building of the infrastructure that is required. There is this boogeyman that has somehow crept in to say that the credit bureau is not good because it is going to make credit inaccessible for most persons. I will candidly say and take flack for it, then isn't it not a situation now where in reality we have been lending to persons who are not deserving of credit?
That's true. Very true.
And if we have been doing that, are we not crowding out the persons who are deserving of credit? And if you are not paying your bills, should you be given credit at the same rate as a person who is not missing payments and is not defaulting on their obligations. And the one thing I will highlight here that we often as a small society miss, a bank or any financial institution that lends and at the same time borrows is only a fiduciary party putting together the person's in terms of money and how it moves. So what do I mean by that? When you go to a bank to borrow, you're not borrowing from Gowan Bo individually. You're borrowing from Nahaja, who has placed a deposit with Fidelity. Mm-hmm. You are borrowing from Mr. Nuri, who has placed his deposit at Fidelity.
I'm a real Fidelity customer, for the record, John.
Well, that's the ones there. It better be, and if not, it better be later on. But equally, so when borrower A fails to pay, who suffers? Mm. It is ultimately, without the prudent management of the bank, it's going to be the depositor. Who is the depositor? You. So when your salary goes into the bank is taking, if you will, pooling of persons' safety options that they're provided, meaning that you can safely secure your money. Instead of putting it under the mattress, you have it in a digital format, you have it online, you can see it, you can move it, everything else, to lend to persons who are there. Now, yes, there's the investor, who is the shareholder. But the shareholder has put their money up at risk. So is it right that a borrower should be able to walk away from an obligation that is then going to leave the individual exposed, if you will, to having losses? So when you saved all your money and you invest in a company, do you expect to make money or lose money?
Oh, I don't
so
make money.
The management of banks have to actually focus itself on the ability to manage depositors, borrowers, and the actual employees who are another stakeholder group and the investors. Mm-hmm. So it is not an easy situation of saying just be easy on borrowers, because there's no money tree. There's not a Wizard of Oz. There's not a money pot. If I make decisions that are not in the best interest of all parties, then I am going to have all parties suffer. And so you have to be very careful. So the credit bureau, and I saw where they say, you know, the capitalism and potentially, you know, the exploitation of capitalism.
Yep.
Well, the reality is that's where education comes so important. If you know you have good credit history because you've always paid your bills, you can demonstrate what it is that you have done in the past. If a bank is not willing to lend to you at prime lending rates, shop around. Mm-hmm. Because you now have a piece of paper to say, I am a prime borrower. Whereas up to this point in time, it was being based on trust. You had to walk into the bank and look as being a altar boy.
Let me ask you this before I let you go. Gowan Bo joining us. Real quickly, Gowan, someone asked a question. Is it so that they're referencing data going, how far back are they collecting data? In terms
since,
of your
since the act was enacted, which is 2018.
So that's as far back as the data will start.
And what it is, and I want to be clear on that one, because I think some persons may say, well, I stopped paying one loan in 2016, so I'm going to get caught by it. well, no, because in 2018, that loan was still in default, and there was likely still a judgment on the books of a bank that was pursuing you for that loan. So it is the information starting as at 2018 and going forward. Now, what does that mean? If you were a little delinquent in 2015, but you caught it up, will you have a history of missing payments? No, because 2015 is not going to be in there. Mm-hmm. It is only going to be the transaction history, the monthly discipline, the actual process that is there, and you are judged on your sort of credit history from that point in time.
Yeah. You know, we'll do another show sometime in the near future just on really maximizing one's banking potential. Yeah. Really, you know, how do you look better? Even if there wasn't this credit bureau, how do we look mm-hmm. better? You know, what are some of the challenges single people face with borrowing for a home? Because I find mm-hmm. out, I remember the former minister said, you might need to stay with your boyfriend. I mean, you may not be happy, but the two of you together can get home. That was
well. That's and I think that I would have said it more a different way. It ain't stay with your boyfriend just to get the home. Pooling of resources because it may mean that you and your sister need to now build a home together instead of each individually trying to do so. It may mean the need for friends to start to do resources together. But, you know, I think what we have to also bear in mind is we are best suited to tell our own story. Mm-hmm. If we allow someone else to tell our story, it is up to what they want to say. Mm-hmm. And so that goes for us as persons, but it goes for us as country as well in government. That we need to make sure that commentators, observers, analysts, whatever you have looking at the country, if we have a void in information that is clear, relevant, and timely to tell our story, mm-hmm. then we are actually at the behest of their narrative and who believes them.
That's right.
So the best way of counteracting, whether it be as a borrower, it be as a country, or it be as a government, have the story written so that you can demonstrate it. And people are not left to say, well, who do I trust? They can simply look at the facts and circumstances and details that you've laid out in front of them.
Gawan Bo, as always, a pleasure to have you on the show, my friend. I learn every time you're on. And someone said, Gawan is a practical genius. A practical, intelligent genius. So this, they're running out. I like it. I like it. Excellent summation. And so we have tons of questions, but we'll get to that on another show. Gawan, thank you so much, man.
Always a pleasure, and keep it up. You know, what's most important, Aj, is that we elevate the conversation. Mm-hmm. That when we are talking nonsense, mm-hmm. we are doing nonsense. Mm-hmm. When we're talking sense, we may actually have an opportunity to make some sense.
Amen. I love it. Look at you giving all this nice little word. I like you, buddy. Take care. Have a good one.
See you later. You're all right. Take care and be safe.
Bye-bye. All right, everyone. We will be back after this. My good friend, C.A. Nuri. Always a pleasure having Gawan Bo on. We'll be back right after this.
Sugar, sugar, let's get sugary. Softer, smoother, and amazing skin. Oh, sugar, sugar, we're the sugar ladies, giving you skin soft as a baby's. Goodbye hair, we'll take good care of you.
Come visit us at Bahar Treat Spa on East Bay Street. Contact us at 323-6711 or visit us online at www.baharitree.com.
The Water and Sewage Corporation advises the public and its customers that the corporation will commence improvement works on Bamboo Boulevard, South Beach East, beginning Friday, September 3rd, 2021, from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. daily for a period of 8 weeks. During this time, there may be some interruption in water supply and traffic flow around the work area. The corporation apologizes for any inconvenience caused.
What happened to you?
You look like you lost your paycheck.
Man, I just realized I got scammed out of a bunch of money. They said I won this contest and just needed me to send them some money so I could collect. I mean, to expedite something. Or was it to smooth the process?
Man, you're smarter than that. Protect yourself against scams and fraud by following these tips. If you know you didn't enter a competition, you can't win. Never pay to receive a cash prize. If you're being asked, you're being scammed. Check trusted internet sites for verification of information given to you. Do not give your banking details to people you don't know. If it sounds too good to be true, it is. Monitor your bank account regularly for any questionable transactions.
Get more information at GetMoneySmartBahamas.com.
When I had got prostate cancer, my family didn't know if I was going to live. At Cancer Treatment Centers of America. Within days, I got an appointment. They presented me with treatment options, and they set up a robotic prostatectomy. When my scans came back, there are no signs of cancer. They don't see you as a number, they see you as a part of family. I'm going on with my life. That's a real gift.
Call us at Cancer Treatment Centers of America.
You invest in your children, your home, and your community. But are you investing in your financial future? At CFAL, we specialize in investment management, retirement planning, mutual funds, and private wealth management. Our team of experts never stops helping you plan for tomorrow. Because tomorrow begins today. Call us at 502-7010 to see what our financial advisors can do for you. CFAL, growing wealth for future generations.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Head back with Nahasha Black, Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Well, it's a Friday evening. Beam! The people, them tired of working. Ba-da-ba-dow. No? Nobody. Nobody. That's how it all goes. My good friend, C.A. Nuri, joins me on the show. C.A., it's Friday, boo! Friday. It's been a long week.
Make it to Friday.
New government, right? Seven good days?
Seven good days of celebratory actions happening so far.
Listen, I
every day it seems to be a swearing in.
My God. There was two today. There was actually one today.
It was two today. Two today.
Yeah, the Prime Minister is the Minister of Finance.
And the former opposition.
And the former Prime Minister.
I'm good, how are you?
Good morning, sir.
You know, the former Prime Minister today. The former Prime Minister today was sworn in, but he kind of, I support, you know, the fact that people get busy. You know, folks get busy. So the former Prime Minister gets his swearing in, hops out of the nice vehicle. And I was about to walk inside. And then he was stopped and said, you remember your wife? Melania. and he forgot his whole wife. And then, you know, like the whole person, like a whole person just reminded you a little Trumpish. I told you he's a Trump man. It's just a real whole thing. If you haven't seen that video, it will be on social media for sure. Our news was so helpful. My news network, Our News, definitely has that clip. It was one to see. Thank God for Jack Thompson. Being able there to remind the Prime Minister that Mistress Menace was with him.
The leader of the opposition needed no reminder. He knew where his wife was. He expects her to catch up and be with him, like good wives. But she was not there.
No.
And then Jack Thompson put himself in between a married people business.
And he should have
pointed out, he didn't ask for help. He didn't ask you to point out nobody. And he decided to point out, hey. You can't walk inside by yourself.
I wonder if he asked, is she in the car? And then he turned around and realized that she was there, you know? So,
No, she might have said she wasn't coming. So,
and they were surprised. But I think I've seen her standing there for a while.
You know, so anything can happen. These things happen all the time.
Well, the former Prime Minister said that he will be a vibrant, the Free National Movement will be a vibrant opposition. What are your thoughts on that? Vibrant opposition.
And I believe the FNM will be a vibrant opposition. I think they have a lot to show and eager to show that they're viable. So I believe they'll be very active for the next 4 to 5 years.
You know what? I would say that right now, you know, the Gussie May cabinet, that's an easy one to do. You're right. You can definitely critique the size of the cabinet.
I'm not sure if you can even critique it. The moment you mentioned, I saw that one of your reporters, your lead editors, mentioned that the cabinet was Gussie May, right?
Who's that? Candia?
Since you won't call names.
Candia's the lead editor, man. Yes.
And the vitriol that went out from sycophants. I said, Lord, I'm not sure she should criticize or even mention, because it wasn't even a critique. It was a mention of fact.
It is a Gussie May cabinet. Yeah. The cabinet is too large.
But the PLP followers, the hacks, mash her up. I say, this wasn't called for. She made a factual observation. It's a large cabinet. And I expect that for those 4 years, anyone mentioning anything about the PLP will get mashed right up. That's what happens when you have such a large amount of MPs in the House, and your followers are excited. You expect them to be loud. You expect them to be bleating, and you expect them to make a lot of noise when you do things.
And that's fine. But that's fine. So they're always mindful that the one thing they won't call us is bias. So that's fine. You know, it is.
You get called bias soon.
No. That's what happens. And then they'll come to us, it's not true. But then, you know, then we'll be paid and all of that foolishness.
Yes,
you know,
it is coming soon. It is what it is.
Kendi has thick skin. That's why she's been with the Guardian for forever.
Yeah. Listen, my point is, all she did was made an observation, and these people went became a rabbit out of nothing. You know.
Listen, my whole thing is the former prime minister saying there'll be a vibrant opposition. I chuckled. I laughed.
You don't believe it'll be vibrant. You don't believe that persons like Sharon.
I know. I do believe there will be a vibrant opposition. That is what they're good at. They're good at being opposition, right? When you had a chance, though, and that's why what frustrates me is I think they need to be quiet just for a little longer. The reason why I say that is until the next budget period, because that's when you should have still been the prime minister. Until May 10th.
Perhaps they should not go to the House Assembly till May 10th.
No. The House of Assembly
should be going there because you're going there to vote.
No. They can make noise. Listen, they will do what...
You're mixing me up.
Can you just
either
stop
you
talking.
Want them to do their job or you don't want them to do their job.
A vibrant opposition... You know what that sounds like? Okay, well, they're great at opposition, period. I think that's what they do well. I find that everybody can govern better when they're in office. That's the first thing. Everybody's better at it outside of government. To say they're going to be vibrant, though, I think you just bide your time. You don't have to say much. Let this progressive Liberal Party govern. If you believe, which I've already spoken to some former members of parliament who really believe that this Gussie May cabinet is already putting them in the wrong footing because I was told yesterday, this is what was said to me, because not only is it that you have members of the cabinet ministers, but the cabinet ministers have drivers, they have cars, they have ancillary fees apart from the wages. Those are expenses not accounted for in the budget.
We will borrow, Nahaja. Whatever it takes to govern and make sure this country runs right.
If the Free National Movement believes that, you don't have to say much. Trust the arm of the press. Sit there politely. And if you feel as if the press is quiet, then you nudge and say, okay, listen, I don't know if y'all saw X, Y, and Z. But I don't think it's wise for them right now to try and act that they all know what they're doing. Because we moved on from them because they didn't know what they were doing. And so just calm down. Wait your time. Because again, for the record, they didn't even need to be the opposition now. Okay? So, you know.
So who should be the opposition now?
It doesn't matter. They didn't need to be the opposition. The opposition would have still been the four members of parliament for the PLP. That's who the opposition would have been.
But the Lord intervened, and now it is what it is.
The Lord surely did intervene. It's a new day. Hallelujah.
So we are talking current and not talking past.
I tell you, they better, for their strategy's sake, don't say much. Just, if someone is going to implode, let them implode. If that's what you believe, let them implode. You don't have to be quiet the entire time. Just give them a few months. And if you believe that the Progressive Liberal Party will implode, you let them implode. And then you say, well, you see. But not right now. You ain't gonna be that vibe, especially Dr. Menes. You need to not be as vibrant. You need to dim that light. He needs to dim it down a smidgen. The fire's still red on him. Ain't nobody want to hear from him, just like we didn't want to hear from Christie. He just has to know right now, cease and desist, because you ain't that vibrant, that we don't consider you that bright. Okay? Don't do it. Now, we got to say this thing before we go. So, CA, there has been some new orders, right? Some amendments to the order, some emergency powers, things that have changed, and I want to make sure that we go through them one more time before we leave today. So what has been changed? Ladies and gentlemen, some new amendments to the emergency orders starting today. The amended orders make the following changes to the existing emergency power orders as follows. This is coming from the Ministry of Health, the Minister of Health, Michael Darvill. This is the press release. Of course, the Prime Minister signed this order right? And I'll get that actual order for you as well to see. The order removes the requirement for a health travel visa, a travel health visa for inter-island travel within the Bahamas. So no more travel health visa for inter-island travel within the Bahamas. Vaccinated persons traveling inter-island from New Providence and Grand Bahama will now only be required to produce a negative result of a rapid antigen test of the type approved by the Ministry of Health. If not, vaccinated travelers are required to produce a negative result of the RT-PCR test at the point of embarkation to the operator of the airline or vessel on which they're traveling. Number three, for persons traveling inter-island from any other islands of the Bahamas, only a negative result of an antigen test of the type approved by the Ministry of Health is required. So if you are traveling to inter-island from Nassau, from New Providence and Grand Bahama, if you're vaccinated, I gather you rapid antigen test, a negative result from a rapid antigen test. But if you're not vaccinated, you will require a PCR test. Okay. But if you're traveling inter-island from any other islands of the Bahamas, you only need a negative result of an antigen test of the type approved by the Ministry of Health. Number four, the requirement for secondary testing for inter-island travelers is now removed. So we were never needing that secondary testing for inter-island travelers no more. The travel health visa is still required for Bahamian citizens, residents, and visitors entering the Bahamas. So if you're coming into the Bahamas, coming home, you will need the travel visa, the health visa. The payment of the travel health visa fee is no longer required for Bahamian citizens and residents returning to the Bahamas. So the health visa is required if you're coming into the Bahamas. But if you are a Bahamian citizen or resident, there is no longer a fee. CA, those are the changes effective immediately from the Ministry of Health signed by the Prime Minister. So these are good things. People were complaining about why are we paying a health visa fee to travel into Ryland or to come into the Bahamas. All of those things are removed if you're traveling inter-island. Into any inter-island from any other island other than New Providence or Grand Bahama, you only need a rapid antigen test versus if you are traveling from Freeport or Grand Bahama and New Providence, you will need a rapid antigen test or if not vaccinated, a RT-PCR test. So we got a lot of things there that the government has changed. I like those. There were many things that you'd always ask, what is the point? And the fact that we moved from $40 to then $10, it was $80 at one point, then it moved to $40, then it moved to $10. It showed that they were making a killing at the beginning. And every time there was a pushback, we would get less. What was the purpose of it? Where is the fees? How do we use them? They called it revenue for who, what, where, why, and how. Anyways, your thoughts, my friend, before I let you go.
Well, I'd like to know where all that money going. And which account is it in? Is it in the consolidated fund as yet or still in that obscure
that,
bank
that account? Company, that company's account. You ever hear any foolishness like that? Is that even legal? That's not illegal.
Hopefully this administration will rectify that and tell us where the money is and do a withdrawal, a large withdrawal, and put the money where it's supposed to be.
Boy, I need to see. I need all kind of transparency on all of these things. But listen, we've done all kind of the shady stuff like taking NIB money and paying off Bank of the Bahamas. We've done all kind of weird things in this day and age. I ain't know. That's why it's just what today is, Cecil. It's a week Friday. From that. It's Friday. It was a, they call it.
And it's a new day.
It's a new day. Special thanks before we go to Popeye's Count Salad. Popeye's the celebrity Kong salad man right there on off of Market Street, the corner opposite Five Porches. We had an excellent and exciting day today with the Kong salad man, the celebrity Kong salad man. Cecil paid his debt. He paid his debt and this Kong salad was fantastic. Go to my Facebook page and please, you can feel free to watch it. It was an experience, eh, Cecil? Before we go,
it was an experience. It needs to be a tour. I enjoyed myself. I learned a lot today.
We got to pick our own conch. I did. Cecil didn't.
Who knew that conch have sexual organs?
I think everybody did except for you. I'm just saying. Okay, what you thought that they did? They were asexual. They just pop out conchs for no reason?
Yes.
All right.
I thought they were like frogs. You know, they lay the eggs there and someone come over it and, you know, fertilize it.
All right, great times. All right, have a good one. I love you. Yeah, buddy. You're listening to The Hit Back. Check out Popeye's Celebrity Conk Stand, and you can find him on Facebook as well. Excellent business. Special thanks to Stephen Dane, his wonderful wife, Dr. Nyambi Campbell Hall Dane, who's a great show, friend of the show. CA, thank you, buddy. You're the best. See you guys next week. You're listening to The Hit Back with Nahaja Black, Guardian Radio. Tune in tonight to Clint's show. He's got an announcement, I was told. He's got an announcement. I wonder what he's going to say. Everybody, see you tomorrow. Monday. We're out.